Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Stephen L. Kent's Rogue Clone. Narrated by Ken Jackson and Terrence Aislefort. With performances by Joel David Santner, Tim Pabon, Casey Jones, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nick DePinto, Michael John Casey, David Harris, Danny Gavigan, Richard Cutting, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Evan Casey, Elliot Dash, Scott McCormick, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Gregory Gorton, David Coyne, Christopher Sheeran, Nora Ashrati, Thomas Keegan, Mort Shelby, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, and Kimberly Gilbert. Rogue Clone, Book 8, The Clone Sedition. Location, Seattle. Date, January 9, 2519. Three men were following me, but I only needed one to answer my questions, so I decided to kill the other two. It was near midnight. It was that rare, dry winter night in Seattle. A thick, cloudy fog filled the street, making the darkness darker. There was a strange odor in the air, a sharp chemical scent I did not recognize. The smell was faint and becoming weaker. I did not have time to wonder what it was, though. My mind was on the men who were following me. Muggers or assassins? Muggers didn't worry me. In truth, neither did assassins. But that was because death held a certain attraction for me, especially if I could take these bastards with me. I was dressed in civilian clothing instead of the uniform of a Marine in the enlisted man's empire, and I did not have a gun or a knife. No problem. Muggers tended to be big, strong, and aggressive, but untrained, relying on fear as much as violence. I wasn't afraid. I was trained, and I was ready. I came to a corner and looked both ways before crossing, not searching for cars or muggers, but surveying the potential battlefield. Maybe I should run. Would I stand a better chance of luring them in if I pretended to be afraid? A strange thought ran through my mind. Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed? I had no idea where the thought had come from or what it meant. It was a stray. My shadows saw me standing by the curb and stopped abruptly. I walked across the street and sprinted into the fog. The hunting party followed my example. But of course, they had given me a head start. Now that they knew I had heard them, they abandoned their attempt at stealth and raced after me. I was 29 years old and in my prime. I kept myself in shape. Apparently, only one of my would-be attackers jogged every day. When I turned a corner and paused to listen, the sound of their footsteps told me that one of my pursuers had pulled away from the pack. He would be the tough one, the athlete.
Careful, Butch!
Butch didn't have an opportunity to answer. He came tearing past the corner where I waited, and I stuck out a leg. I placed a foot across the back of his neck and snapped his spine. I picked up the knife he had dropped. Then I walked back into the alley, into total darkness, and I worked my way slowly back around the block. By the time I came back to the street, Butch's two pals had found his corpse.
Butch! Butch, are you okay?
Using parked cars for cover, I came within 10 feet of the bastards. After watching them to make sure they were as stupid as I thought, I stepped out from behind a sedan. He's with God and the angels now. The short-term survivors turned and squinted into the fog, trying to find me. The guy kneeling beside the body had a book in one hand and a carving knife in the other. Hardly the weapons of an assassin or a mugger. The bearded one on his feet held a 2-foot-long metal rod. He grasped it between his hands the way a worker would hold a pickaxe. All three of them, the two men and the corpse, wore rags instead of clothes. Their hair was long, and they had the dirty, musty smell of unwashed clothes. These weren't assassins. They were goddamned missionaries? Had I just killed a man who had come thinking to save my non-existent soul?
Do you want to talk about this?
The one on his feet raised his rod in the air.
Father, take me into the bosom of Abraham!
He charged right at me, screaming and waving his stick. He brought the rod down as if it were a samurai sword. I stepped to the side. I picked the rod up from the fallen man. The third man stood and faced me.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want.
Put down the knife and you just might avoid the valley of death.
He leadeth me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul!
As this guy sprang forward, he used the rod I'd borrowed from his friend to break one of his kneecaps. Cracked the man across the back of his head with the rod, knocking him unconscious. Then I picked up his knife and slit his throat with it. Still holding a knife in one hand and a steel rod in the other, I walked over to where the sole survivor lay. I knelt beside the man, carefully placing the rod and knife where I could see them.
You murdered me.
You should have thought about that before you came after me.
I'm dying.
Don't pack your bags just yet. Let's chat. Nasty wound. I plunged my finger into the wound. Deep, too. You don't exactly strike me as your typical dark alley stalker.
Oh, damn you. Damn you.
I want to help you. I'll show you. Watch.
I pulled out my mobile.
Base Command.
This is General Wason Harris.
Yes, sir.
Do you have my location?
Yes, sir.
There's been an accident. Can you send medevac?
Yes, sir.
I looked down at him. That's a medical evacuation unit. Military talk for an ambulance.
We'll have an air unit there in 5 minutes, sir.
You better hurry. This guy has lost a lot of blood. Do you think you can hold on for 5 minutes?
For you shall burn in the fiery pits of hell, and Lucifer himself shall escort you through the shadowy gates of hell.
Tell them to bring a gallon of plasma. There. See, I'm trying to help you.
Oh, I failed. Failed. I forgive you.
Even in the fog-filtered light, I could see that his face had gone as white as milk. Don't you die on me. He did not respond. I placed my knee on his chest and slapped him across the face.
Why'd you come after me?
Legion.
Are you part of some kind of militia?
The son of a bitch showed me the sweetest, most angelic smile. I slapped the guy to see if I could wake him up, but I knew it wouldn't work. Then that alien thought repeated itself. Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed. It kept flashing in my brain. Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed. Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed.
What were you doing on the waterfront?
This is the hospitality district.
Not at midnight, it isn't.
I came for a drink.
Didn't you say you were staying at Fort Lewis?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't buy it. You drove 50 miles for a nightcap. What, they don't have bars on base? How about in Tacoma? They got bars in Tacoma.
He had a good point. Tacoma, a fairly good-sized town, was located just north of Fort Lewis. I'd driven 40 miles to reach Seattle.
I felt like celebrating.
By yourself?
I didn't come trolling for Christians. I wasn't going to say it. But the person I had come to see was the opposite of the men I ran into. I came in search of a mercenary named Ray Freeman. He never showed. As a civilian, the police detective had absolutely no authority over me. Even if he'd caught me torturing these guys red-handed, he couldn't have arrested me. My participation in these crimes automatically put them under military jurisdiction. 4 hours had passed since the confrontation began, and I was still on the street, standing around in the fog and the cold, watching the crime scene investigation unit scour for clues. The police car's spotlights illuminated a 40-foot circle with a shortwave light that penetrated the fog. Why, I wondered, are they searching for clues when they have the confessed killer? With the cars here, I could see the scene clearly. Mostly, I saw the bodies of the victims, three soft, domesticated types, two of them barely over 20 years old. They looked like college students.
Why don't you tell me the real reason you came?
I like the bars in this part of town. I like watching the waterfront.
Oh, yeah, yeah, nice view.
Are you quite finished, officer?
Travis Watson was my civilian advisor. I had hired him because he was smart, competent, and natural-born. I needed a natural-born aide to help interface with the civilian population. Having recently been conquered by the all-clone military, a lot of people were wary of clones. Go figure. Watson was also fresh out of college, brash, bordering on disrespectful, and easily distracted by women. No one is perfect.
You know what I think, Harris? I think these kids came to the bar for a drink, and you lured them out and killed them. You probably have friends hidden out in the alley. That's what I think. How many men did you have with you, huh?
The detective was in his 40s, a large, pudgy man in a long coat that kept him warm. He glared at me, knowing that I was above his law. That's an interesting theory. Does unsubstantiated guesswork count as police work these days?
Oh, listen to you. You got 3 stars and a civilian assistant general, but you don't have an alibi. Does your rank let you get away with murder in the army, too?
I'm a Marine.
Same difference. Marines are like ants. They're real tough in a group. How tough are you when you're all alone?
Good question. Why don't you ask them?
You want to know what I think?
Not really. Look, we know who killed these men, so there's no point investigating the murder. I did it. My fingerprints are on the rod, my shoe print is on that one's neck. Now that we know who killed them, the next step in the investigation would be to find out who the spec they are. I want to know why they came downtown and why they were following me, and why they had 2 knives and an iron rod. What I really want to know is why that asshole over there was carrying a damn Bible. Do you get that a lot up here? Thugs carrying Bibles and butcher knives?
No, we do not have a lot of Bible-toting thugs.
I turned to Watson. Is it just me, or do you find his taste in books as fascinating as I do?
We'll look into it.
You might take DNA samples, too. Find out why these clowns attacked a Marine, and you might even save a few lives in the process.
Since when did you care about saving lives?
Oh, detective, my entire existence is about saving lives. Both natural-born and synthetic.
Uh-huh. You still haven't told me what you were doing out here.
So what were you doing out here?
Like the detective, my civilian adjutant did not entirely trust me. Nearly a year had passed since the enlisted man's empire had conquered Earth. It was a fight that nobody wanted, but we didn't have much choice. The government of the enlisted man's empire was really just an expanded military chain of command, a collection of clones. Originally brewed to serve the unified authority, the Earth-centric empire that colonized the Milky Way, we clones began our existence protecting natural-born mankind's 180 colonized planets. The unified authority wanted to protect its citizens without sacrificing their own children, so the government amassed a vast military with clone enlisted men to do the heavy lifting. The officers were natural-born, but they didn't stay around when the fighting began. That system worked just fine, right up until an alien army stormed the galaxy, capturing 179 of our 180 colonies. When the natural-born politicians asked what went wrong, the natural-born officer corps blamed their failures on the clones, and the natural-born public took them at their word. In response, the Unified Authority decided to ditch us. We were shipped out to obsolete fleets, stranded in deep space. 2 things ended our exile. We figured out how to return to Earth, and the aliens launched a new kind of attack. They started incinerating planets to exterminate the inhabitants. With the Avatari burning our bridges behind us, one planet at a time, we turned our sights to the homeworld. I led the enlisted man's invasion of Earth. We beat the Unifieds, then we dug in and waited for incineration. A year had passed with no sign of the aliens. Not that anyone complained. Ask a dozen people why the aliens never reached Earth, and you'd hear a dozen explanations. The prevailing theories were that A. God destroyed the aliens. B. Having been turned back before reaching Earth on their first invasion, the aliens now ignored the planet. And C. A small fleet sent out to track down the aliens had located their planet and destroyed them. I personally preferred the third option. though I could not imagine how they'd managed to accomplish such a feat.
General?
Yes?
Why did you come into town?
I don't see where that is any of your business.
It is and it isn't. You killed 3 civilians. If you want to label the killings as a need-to-know basis Marine Corps operation, then it's none of my business. If you want to keep on good terms with the local police, you need to give me something.
Drop it. Good night, officer. The final lingerings of the lustrous night still hung over the city. Streetlights and headlights and the occasional lit window pierced the darkness, but daylight was only an hour or two away. I came to meet a friend. Well, a business associate. A guy named Freeman.
Did he show up for the meeting?
No.
So he wasn't one of the 3 guys back there?
Nope, he is not one of the corpses.
Are you sure your friend is safe? Maybe we should have the police look for him.
There's no point involving the locals. If Freeman doesn't want to be found, the last thing you want to do is find him.
Would you like me to contact Naval Intelligence? Maybe they can track him down.
We reached the car. Freeman will find me when he's ready.
Do you want me to take you back to Fort Lewis?
Might as well. It's been a long night. As he climbed into the car, Watson pulled out his life pad and stared at it for several seconds.
There's a plane waiting at base to fly you back to Washington, General. Admiral Cutter wants to meet with you.
Do you know what it's about?
Apparently, you weren't the only Marine mugged last night. The Admiral thinks this may have been the first shots fired in a civil war.
There were 1,723 Marines attacked on the night of January 9, 2519. The Marine Corps lost 108 men and killed over 2,000. All things considered, it was a pretty good night. Location: Washington, D.C. Date: January 11, 2519. It was beginning to look like the opening salvo of the war would also be the final shot. The mystery group that attacked so many Marines on January 9 never announced itself. Maybe they were ashamed. They lost almost 20 times as many people as they killed. When the police, both military and civilian, found nothing useful, Naval Intelligence took over. Results followed. So did briefings. What do you mean they were from Mars? I spoke to the officer from Naval Intelligence.
Well, they're not from Mars. I mean, sir, Mars does not have a native population. They're New Olympian. The men who attacked you were refugees from Olympus Cree.
Olympus Cree was the first planet the enlisted man's empire evacuated during the second alien attack. We crammed the entire population, 17 million people, into Mars Spaceport, the enormous and superfluous civilian travel center that had served as the hub of pan-galactic travel back in the days when mankind traveled the galaxy. Lieutenant Colonel, I am well aware who is on Mars. What I need to know is what the hell 6,000 homicidal New Olympians were doing on Earth, and how the spec they got here.
We haven't had any success answering those questions as of yet, sir.
He was scared of me. I could hear it in his voice. And it wasn't just my rank. With one exception, the clones of the enlisted man's empire did not know they were clones. I was that exception. My class of clones was bred for independence and violence. The Lieutenant Colonel was a newer model than me. My DNA included a gland that released a highly addictive cocktail of testosterone and adrenaline into my blood in battle. The scientists who invented my kind called it the combat reflex.
General, these are photographs of the men you killed. They're not the type of people normally associated with violent attacks.
Tell me something I don't know. Autopsy photographs and identification documents appeared on my briefing tablet. Why the hell the intelligence division ran autopsies on these stiffs was beyond me. I knew damn well how they died. I was there. The pictures on my tablet rotated so that the autopsy photo of one of the men came to the top. I had slit his throat. A table listed his vital statistics. Name: Tom Nisi. Height: 5'11". Weight: 163 pounds. Age: 37.
This is Tom Nisi. From what we can tell, he was the ringleader. Prior to the evacuation of Olympus Cree, he appears to have worked as an engineer designing car seats.
He designed seats for cars?
Yes, sir. He specialized in smart seats for luxury cars. The seats he designed read your posterior signature and automatically adjusted to your body temperature, spinal posture, and firmness preferences.
Seats that know you by the spread of your ass?
More or less, sir.
37-year-old car seat designers don't strike me as much of a security risk.
No, sir.
What makes you think Nisi was in charge?
He was 10 years older than Grant or Rand.
Who are Grant and Rand?
Nisi, Grant, and Rand, the three men you... who attacked you, sir.
The other two were named Grant and Rand. I didn't know their names.
Yes, sir. Tom Nisi was 10 years older than the other men. He was the only one with an actual job on Mars. That was one of the patterns we found when we started investigating the Night of the Martyrs.
The Night of the Martyrs?
That's what they're calling it on the media link.
Three of those martyrs came after me with knives and a pipe.
Yes, sir.
Catchy name.
Yes, sir.
You might as well continue.
Yes, sir. As I was saying, sir, there was a pattern among all of the teams. An older member, generally with a paying job, leading two younger men.
Was he designing car seats on Mars?
No, sir. Nisi worked in the spaceport loading docks.
He was a stevedore?
Yes, sir. And the assistant pastor of a spaceport Christian congregation.
A pastor. That checked out. I remembered the Bible. A Bible and a blade. Have you contacted Gordon Hughes about this Night of the Martyrs? What does he have to say about it? Gordon Hughes was the de facto governor of Mars, or at least the population living in Mars Spaceport, which was the only known population on the planet.
He says his people are still loyal to the enlisted man's empire, sir.
Do you believe him?
We're still trying to piece it all together. I spoke with Colonel Riley before coming here.
Martin Riley was the head of Mars Spaceport Security, a detail of 5,000 lucky Marines attached to the spaceport as a peacekeeping force. What does Riley think?
He believes the spaceport is a powder keg with a lit fuse. His exact words were, "They're going to start eating their babies and blaming us for it."
It sounds like Colonel Riley and Governor Hughes don't exactly see eye to eye.
No, sir. According to Colonel Riley, Governor Hughes has become something of a figurehead.
Really? When did that happen?
According to Colonel Riley, a religious revival has spread across the spaceport. He says the religious movement has superseded the government.
Does Hughes still live in the administrative offices?
Yes, sir.
Governor Hughes says the New Olympians are loyal to us, and Colonel Riley says they want to start a civil war.
There is no evidence of a popular movement on Mars.
Except that 2,000 Marines were attacked by 6,000 New Olympians who should not have been on this planet in the first place.
Hughes says they don't want to go to war with us.
Of course they don't want a war. The ungrateful bastards can't feed themselves without us. Mars Spaceport isn't a colony, it's a damn homeless shelter. The bastards can't declare war without starving to death.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
Governor Hughes says we can avoid further bloodshed by closing down Mars.
He wants his people repatriated. It was a fair request. Earth had enough room for 1 billion immigrants. Given our current fleet limitations, it would take months to transport 17 million people to Earth, but we could do it. After the Night of the Martyrs, we were less likely to relocate those people than we would have been a week ago. Now we had to worry about sedition, which was a highly contagious virus. If we brought the New Olympians to Earth, their unrest could and probably would spread among the general population. The locals didn't exactly welcome us back when we overthrew the Unifieds. We don't need Olympus Cree zealots fanning the fires.
No, sir.
Anything else of interest?
Yes, sir. Colonel Riley sent over a report about a movement called the Martian Legion.
The Martian Legion. A picture of a hallway appeared on my tablet. Scrawled across the wall was the word Legion. The picture shrank, and dozens, if not hundreds, of similar pictures appeared. I tapped on one. It showed an ornate archway leading into what once had been a gourmet restaurant. Somebody had carved something into the beam along the top. I zoomed in for a closer look. Legion is watching. What exactly is Legion?
According to Colonel Riley, the important question is, who is Legion? When we received these images, we thought the term referred to the spaceport security detail, but it doesn't fit. We can't even tell if the New Olympians consider Legion a friend or a foe. Some of the graffiti makes Legion out to be a threat. Some suggest that Legion is a savior. We have been able to determine one thing. Nisi and the other martyrs were connected to Legion.
The screen on my tablet showed a photograph of an elbow, tattooed on the soft flesh inside the crook of the joint. In curly longhand letters was the word Legion. The skin around it was pale and slightly blued, the color of curdled milk. The picture had been taken during the autopsy. Is this Nisi's arm?
It could have been any of the martyrs' arms. They all have the exact same tattoo.
We need to find out about Legion. Tell Colonel Riley I'm coming to Mars. A job like this could require a delicate hand. I did not need anything new on my plate. I had Marines playing policemen on Mars. I had a corps to run. I had bases and operations to look after. Now that we had brought down the Unified Authority, the enlisted man's empire was creating a government to replace it. We had laws to write and enforce, and two angry populaces to placate. Nearly a year had passed, and we were still trying to round up the politicians and officers who had led the Unified Authority into starting the war. Most of the sons of bitches had gone into hiding. We caught scapegoats during the early days after the war and locked them up in jail. A few kindly Unifieds had even been good enough to fall on their own swords, so to speak. We buried them quietly. On top of that, there was another nagging security issue that needed to be resolved. Broadcast travel. Measured from edge to edge, the Milky Way was 100,000 light years across, give or take a trillion miles. Man had not yet invented a ship that could travel at the speed of light, meaning that a quick jaunt across the galaxy and back would take a minimum of 200,000 years. Enter broadcast physics, a technology that enabled ships to travel to any pre-calculated spot instantaneously. Broadcast travel, which involved unleashing incredible amounts of energy, rendered questions of distance irrelevant. Once you plugged the data into a broadcast computer, it no longer mattered if you were traveling to Earth's moon or to another galaxy. You vanished from one spot in an eruption of energy, and you arrived at your destination in a similarly powerful eruption instantaneously. The Unified Authority Navy had a fleet of self-broadcasting ships which vanished during the war. They had broadcasted to a battle in the Scutum Crux arm of the galaxy, and no one ever heard from them again. A year had passed with no sign of those ships. In my book, that meant they were sunk. Officially, the enlisted man's navy did not have self-broadcasting ships. We used a pan-galactic highway called the Broadcast Network, a series of satellites that broadcasted ships from one location to another. Unfortunately, the satellite that connected Earth to the rest of the galaxy no longer existed. We were home, and we were stranded. In theory. The enlisted man's navy was supposed to have one self-broadcasting ship, a stealth cruiser designed for spying. That ship had disappeared during the battle for Earth. For all I knew, the spy ship might have been orbiting Earth, or it might have been parked on my neighbor's front lawn. How do you track an invisible ship? One of the reasons I missed my former life as an enlisted man was the simplicity of that existence. You take a private or a corporal or even master sergeant, he generally tackles one assignment at a time. That assignment might involve running into burning buildings or facing down mortars, but I liked the life of a grunt. What I never liked was juggling multiple concerns. Mars was a problem that might evolve into a catastrophe, but it was not the only thing on my plate. There was another hole in our security. Somehow, this hole had become my direct responsibility as well. Smithsonian Field. We rode out to inspect the site in a staff car. I did not know the sergeant driving the car. Watson and I rode in the back.
Are you taking me to an airfield or a bird-watching event? There aren't any Air Force bases out here.
We had driven 40 miles out of the city and were deep in the forest.
The Air Force didn't build it. They took it over. It used to be a museum.
No shit. And people drove out here to visit it?
Not exactly. It was top secret under the Unified Authority as well.
We wound around ash, alder, and beech-covered hills, driving deeper and deeper into a no-man's land until we left the paved road and went another 5 miles over gravel. We weren't just a million miles from civilization. We were in a high-security forest. We passed 4 checkpoints before reaching the facility's front gate. Along the way, we drove through acres of trees lined by miles of electrified fences. There were guard towers hidden among the ash and cedars, and I spotted a missile battery as we approached the front gate. As far as I was concerned, Smithsonian Field should not have existed at all. Since it did exist, I was glad to see the Air Force taking its security seriously. There, in the middle of nowhere, behind the electric razor wire fence, was a series of oversized bunkers that looked like missile silos. Beyond the bunkers lay an unadorned airstrip mostly covered in snow.
This is it?
Smithsonian Field.
We drove down a snow-covered ramp and entered a bunker, only it wasn't a bunker. It looked like a bunker from the outside, an underground fortification with reinforced walls. That ramp led down 25 feet and wound into an enormous hangar with 30-foot ceilings. The place was as clean as an operating room and brightly lit. It looked like a showroom for luxury cars. It wasn't, though. It was a museum, with 207 antique spaceships that posed an enormous security risk.
This is the original Scientific Explorer fleet, sir. These ships are 100 years old, sir.
The Air Force Major was conducting my tour. The spoon-shaped ships had silver hulls. Each ship was about 30 feet long and no more than 15 feet tall. They had retractable wings and clusters of booster rockets for vertical liftoffs. Destroy them.
General, these ships are an invaluable treasure.
And an incalculable security risk. These ships are the key to the galaxy. Anyone getting their hands on these ships can go anywhere they want. They can go looking for UA ships. They can transport Unified Authority enemy troops.
But, General, these ships are our history.
We'll let future generations worry about preserving history. I'm more concerned about survival, Major.
General, sir, these ships have no strategic value. It takes them an hour just to charge up for a broadcast.
An hour? It takes them an hour? That means they can travel from Earth to Terrano in an hour. That comment ended the tour. The Major must have begun the day seeing himself as some kind of museum curator. Now he realized he was a military man and part of a chain of command.
Yes, sir.
Watson did not speak a word. We returned to the staff car and started the drive home in silence. What the hell did you expect me to say? Watson did not respond. What the hell did you expect?
You probably can't appreciate the value of those ships.
Yeah? Why would that be? He went silent. Smart man. Let's hear it, Travis. I can't appreciate their value because they are part of human history and I'm synthetic. Is that it? He did not answer. Watson, 6,000 new Olympian refugees made it from Mars to Earth by means unknown. For all we know, they traveled in those very same self-broadcasting ships. Actually, we knew they hadn't, but I was making a point. Location: the Churchill. Date: April 3, 2519. 3 months had passed since the night of the martyrs, and nothing significant had happened. No arrests, no attacks, no further intelligence gathered. But tension was growing on Mars. Mars security reported riots and disobedience. The enlisted man's empire had a time bomb in its closets. We either needed to disarm the bomb, known as the Martian Legion, or detonate it.
Remind me again, Harris. Why are you going to Mars?
I want to find out about Legion.
As I understand it, the term Legion may very well be their code name for us. Isn't that right?
Admiral Don Cutter was the highest-ranking officer in the enlisted man's military. He had 4 stars. I had 3.
Harris, the new Olympians are an infestation. Have you actually been in the spaceport?
Dozens of times.
Since we converted it into a flophouse for wayward new Olympians?
I haven't been there since the evacuation.
It's a cesspool. I have discussed the situation with spaceport security. That's as close as I choose to get to that rat's nest. Colonel Riley says the air is so bad that he sleeps in his helmet.
Hyperbole. Sleeping in a helmet is like sleeping with your back on a floor and your head on a bookshelf. Next time he says that, ask him if he has ever actually done it.
Maybe it's time we ship those people to Earth.
EMN procedures barred civilians from military ships, but I had brought Watson along just the same. Sure, we can ship them to Earth. Once we know who's loyal and who's looking for a change of government. They're not going anywhere until we know who is who.
Who is he again?
He's my adjutant.
Why do you have a civilian adjutant?
Because I deal with a lot of civilians.
Are you taking him to Mars as a civilian advisor? As I understand it, this will be a military operation.
He's not going to Mars. I'm leaving him with you.
I don't remember authorizing that.
Leaving the new Olympians on Mars is a bad idea. The longer they are stuck there, the less loyal they will become.
If we ship them to Earth, they'll infect the general population. I can work around 17 million angry new Olympians on Mars. If they stir things up on Earth, we'll have 40 million angry people on our hands.
What do you plan to do with them, Admiral?
Well, like I said before, the place is a cesspool. We should flush it.
Admiral, you are talking about killing 17 million people.
I don't want to kill them. I want to wash my hands of them.
Isn't that the same thing?
One more time. Harris, who is this man?
He's my civilian aide.
And who gave him permission to come aboard my ship?
I did.
And you plan to leave him aboard my ship? What makes you think he'll still be alive when you come back?
Are you going to wash your hands of me?
Give the kid a chance, Admiral.
If I wanted to kill those people, I would have cut off their food long ago.
That would be an interesting way of solving our sedition problem. Starving 1/3 of our citizens to death. I knew that Cutter's neural programming would not allow him to take my bait. On some level, the need to protect human society was hardwired into his brain. I have some ideas about the identity of Legion. Have either of you ever read the Bible?
The Bible? I'm not a fan of mythology.
I haven't read it.
I've read it.
You read the Bible? Of all the people I have ever met, you would be the last one I would ever expect to read the Bible.
I once spent a month trapped on a transport with no one but Ray Freeman.
Good Lord. I would have shot myself.
I tried. My neural programming does not allow for suicide.
Freeman, that's the guy you were looking for in Seattle. What's so bad about him? I thought you were friends.
We are friends.
He's never met Ray Freeman?
Obviously. Ray's not much for conversation. Traveling with him is lonelier than traveling alone. Anyway, the only book I had was a Bible. It was read the Bible or talk to Ray. I went through the specking book 5 or 6 times, as I recall.
Did you just refer to the Bible as a specking book?
Did I?
I take it you were not converted.
Oh, but I was. Maybe not so much by the New Testament, but the Old Testament made perfect sense once I accepted God as a metaphor for the government. The government created all things, and the government took them away. It made perfect sense.
What does a new Olympian militia have to do with the Bible?
The Bible has a story about a guy named Legion, who was possessed by demons. Christ banished the demons, and they went into a herd of pigs, and the pigs killed themselves.
One of the guys you killed in Seattle had a Bible. But if you're saying this is about devils and demons, that wouldn't make sense.
A chilled silence filled the room when I did not answer immediately. We sat around Cutter's desk, none of us quite meeting the other men's eyes.
Well, the Bibles, the suicides, it has all the trappings of fanatics and zealots.
Harris, maybe they think you're the Antichrist.
Maybe they do.
I can't say that I blame them. I kind of do, too.
Well, this really could be the Mogats all over again. Harris, if it is another religious fanatical uprising, you'll be walking into a real shitstorm when you land on Mars.
Just like any other cancer. Catch it early enough, and you might even survive the treatment. Providing Mars spaceport with power, water, and oxygen did not pose a problem. With 17 million refugees living in a facility designed for 6 to 8 million travelers, providing space, food, and bathing facilities did. The refugees lived as crowded together as termites in a nest, and the once elegant spaceport now smelled of grime and sweat. Lines 100 people long extended out of every bathroom. Soup lines shuffled along the halls. Spaceport security sprayed chemicals through the ventilation system in an unsuccessful bid to kill the lice, but there was nothing anyone could do to fix the stench in the air. Engineers built shower facilities and added air filters to the vents, but the place still stunk. Because of the overcrowding, the residents of Mars Spaceport only showered twice per month. A black market had formed for shower passes. Throughout history, relocation centers had always been breeding grounds for crime, dysentery, and insurrection. Mars was no exception. I was in one of the 15 transports preparing to launch when Admiral Cutter contacted me from the bridge. He and Travis Watson would remain safe on his ship while I went down among the heathen.
Harris, are you sure you want to run this mission? The Empire might be better served if...
When I come back, we should have a conversation about renaming our government. We're not an empire. We don't have an emperor and we only have one planet. I think republic would be a more accurate term.
Harris, you could direct this mission as easily from the ship. You are a general, not a platoon leader. When they talk about boots on the ground, they don't mean boots with stars.
I want to make sure Governor Hughes gets the message. If I'm there, he will know we mean business.
Call him and tell him.
I don't think it would have the same impact.
Do you want me to send Watson down once the area is secured?
No.
Have you told Colonel Riley that you're coming?
As the head of the spaceport security detail, Riley had a right to know I was on my way. He was an officer in the Marines, which placed him under my command. Military courtesy dictated my warning him about the mission as a formality. 3 stars do not drop in unannounced. Yes and no. He knows that I am coming, but he doesn't know when. I didn't want to spoil the surprise.
Do you have a problem with Riley?
Not at all. This is a diplomatic operation. Riley and spaceport security should not be involved.
What if you run into trouble?
I won't.
Harris, if things get hot down there...
Just be ready to pick us up when we're done. I don't want to bring any indigenous Martian life home with me in my hair. I wore standard-issue Marine combat armor, though I did have one additional piece of equipment built into my helmet, a piece of communications equipment known as a command link. Using the command link, I could address every man, fire team, platoon, and company under my command, or I could speak to each Marine individually. I could peer through their visors or send them information. As the commanding officer on this operation, I had the command link. Everyone else had interlink equipment. Using the command link, I addressed the platoon sergeants and officers in the group.
This is General Wason Harris. You've all been briefed, but on the off chance that any of you are not paying attention, I will remind you that this is not, repeat, not an invasion. Mars Spaceport is EME held territory. This is not an invasion, it is an inspection. We are 1,500 men patrolling an area populated by 17 million hostiles. We cannot afford to pick a fight. Sergeants, do not allow your men to touch triggers or disengage the safeties unless specifically ordered to do so. That is all.
I entered the cockpit and watched as we launched. We floated out of the ship and penetrated the atmosphere. Below us, Mars Spaceport sparkled on an otherwise dismally dark landscape. The planet's rotation had the spaceport pointing away from the sun. As we descended, I saw the three raised train tracks that ran the 10 miles between the spaceport and Mars Air Force Base. They looked as slender as guitar strings from a half mile up. I left the quiet surroundings of the cockpit and returned to the kettle with its capacity crowd. I came down the ladder. Using the command link, I addressed the entire regiment.
This is General Harris. You have been issued special short-range rounds for your M27s. Any men seen carrying grenades, rockets, or particle beam weapons will face a summary hearing.
And then we touched down. I was the first man off the transport. One of the dock workers came up to me.
Who's in charge of this?
I waited for my men to form ranks. Each of my men's armor gave off a unique signal identifying his name, rank, serial number, and area of military occupational specialty. I could see those signals through my visor. The man who approached me did not have that advantage.
I am. Is there a problem?
Oh.
He was big, strong, natural-born, and unarmed. I was as tall as him, armed, and wearing combat armor. I had 1,500 armed men at my command, all of them carrying M27s with a detachable rifle stock in place. In close quarters like these, the stocks would get in the way if a firefight started, but they made our guns look bigger and more menacing. It was a bluff. Crews of longshoremen stood still as statues as my men finished forming into ranks. They eyed us warily, not moving, not speaking, afraid to turn away. Once my various companies had formed into a regiment, we marched out of the hangar without saying a word. We entered a long service hall. Here the floor was only 30 feet across, but rows of families occupied the areas along each wall. The word Legion had been written in 10-foot-tall letters above their hovels, the letters badly scrawled in runny bright red paint. Beneath the word, the artist had sketched a row of bloody combat helmets, some modern and some that looked like they came from ancient Rome.
You seen this, Jackson?
This mission belonged as much to Colonel Curtis Jackson as it belonged to me. Tarawa was his unit. That had been the nickname for the 2nd Regiment of the 2nd Division since the regiment won a battle on a tiny island nearly 600 years earlier, Tarawa. It was a newly reactivated unit, created over the last month.
Yes, sir. Hard to miss.
The spaceport's lights were dim, and the floors were crowded. Looking around that first corridor, I saw families living on tattered blankets. Their only belongings were a pot for water, a few dirty dishes, and the clothing on their backs. Walking through that hall, we passed a 20-foot mountain of trash that touched the ceiling. Flies buzzed around the pile. Most of the people we passed just stared at us. I passed within 10 feet of an old man lying on a blanket.
Are you speckers invading the spaceport? You can have this hole as far as I'm concerned.
Do you know who painted that wall?
I pointed to the Legion graffiti.
Nope. Must have happened when I was taking a shit.
My Marines marched with perfect precision down one decrepit corridor and into the next as we made our way to the administrative offices. We passed a water dispensary. A line of people carrying pots waited for a turn at the water. Lines for food, lines for water, lines to use the bathroom and bathe. No wonder these people were hostile. Living on Mars, these people were no more self-sufficient than newborn infants. I had a copy of the floor plan in my visor, a rotating, three-dimensional map that included photographs of Mars Spaceport back in its halcyon days. Using optical commands, I spun the floor plan and viewed it from all sides, looking for detours. But our options diminished as we marched on. In order to get to the administrative offices, we would need to enter the Grand Arcade, a 2-mile corridor of stores and restaurants. There would be multiple millions of people in the arcade, maybe even a full 5 million. Using the command link, I contacted Cutter on the Churchill.
Admiral, do you have any spare service blankets?
How many do you need?
17 million.
How bad is it?
Dante Alighieri wouldn't have survived this.
I don't know Alighieri. Is he Marines or Navy?
Neither. He's a civilian.
So what is the situation?
We had no problem landing. The natives aren't especially friendly, but no incidents. We've been avoiding the main areas, but we're going to need to enter the hub to get to Governor Hughes.
It's not too late to withdraw. You're sitting on a powder keg.
It's too late to back out now.
I led my men to the end of the service hall, turned a corner, and got my first look at the Grand Arcade. What had once been a glorious atrium ringed by five floors of upscale stores was now a slum of lean-tos and blankets. 60 feet up, an enormous banner hung from the ceiling. It was not a gleaming, streaming, glorious banner announcing a sale or welcoming travelers to Mars. It was a torn swath of dirt-colored carpeting, 40 feet long and 20 feet wide, with the words Legion, Knight of the Martyrs, painted across it.
Check your console. I'm sending you a streaming feed.
Using an optic command, I transmitted the images. Now Cutter could see everything I saw. I stared up at the banner.
What is that?
It's a banner.
I can see that.
It says Legion, Knight of the Martyrs.
Yeah, I can read.
Then why did you ask what it was?
I looked away from the banner and gave Cutter a panoramic sweep of the area. I showed him throngs of people leaning over the rails of the upper floors. The place was dark and dingy and teeming with refugees. Like I said before, the people crowded together like termites in a nest, and they did not seem happy to see us. From a tactical perspective, we had walked into an untenable nightmare. I had led my men into a deep ocean, never realizing just how helpless we would be against the tides.
Keep them moving.
Aye, sir. General, sir, should we proceed as we are?
We discussed this route back on the ship. There aren't any alternate routes.
We could return to the Churchill.
Begging the General's pardon, sir, but what this Marine means to say is that perhaps we should give them a show of force. We don't want them to think we're scared.
You aren't scared?
No, sir.
Not even the least bit nervous?
No, sir.
You should be, Colonel. There are 10,000 new Olympians for every one of us.
The people on the upper decks began hurling trash at us. The people seemed to sense that we had not come to fight. Small bits of debris rained down on our heads, but the bigger stuff crashed and splattered 50 feet ahead of us. Then it happened. Something about the size of a motorcycle cascaded down from one of the upper floors and hit three of my men. The two dead Marines lay ruptured on the floor, the exoskeletons of their armor broken to pieces, and their legs and arms stretched out so that they looked like man-sized insects that had been crushed. Blood pooled onto the floor around them. That stopped our parade. The parade wasn't the only thing halted at that moment. The fusillade of debris dried up. So did the shouting.
What do we do now?
We walk.
They killed two of my men. They don't get away with killing my men.
Yeah? And what exactly are you going to do about it, Colonel? What the spec do you suggest we do?
We find the people responsible and make an example.
How are you going to find them?
People flooded into the already packed atrium, gawkers hoping we would put on a show, protesters looking to show their anger, and a small battalion of men in suits. The gawkers and protesters kept their distance. The men in suits walked toward us. The men in suits pushed through the crowd. I did not recognize any of them, but I knew who they were. They would be the politicians. Hughes must have sent them.
General, are you going to let them get away with killing Marines?
The men who dropped that, whatever the hell it was, are long gone, Colonel. They're long gone, and I can just about guarantee you, you won't find anyone who saw what happened.
Somebody saw.
Sure they did, but they won't admit it.
One of the suits approached Jackson as he stood over the bodies.
The head assholes are here.
Keep your men on alert.
I pulled off my helmet and got my first whiff of spaceport air. It didn't just smell of sweat. This particular potpourri included feces, garbage, and rot. The men in the suits spotted my dead Marines and stopped walking. Politicians. I had the feeling that none of these men had ever seen a violent death up close. They stared down at the bodies.
Are you in charge of this invasion?
Invasion? Why would we invade Mars?
You have landed on our planet with a large body of armed men.
I have one regiment. That hardly qualifies as a large body.
Why are you here?
Look, I don't mean to be disrespectful.
Yes, you do.
What?
You have come here to threaten us. If you wanted to talk, you would have contacted Governor Hughes through diplomatic channels. Instead, you came with your regiment of heavily armed men.
I came to see Gordon Hughes, not you.
Governor Hughes sent me. If you have something to say...
I'll say it to Hughes.
The man was tall and handsome in his 50s and distinguished looking. I could tell he'd enjoyed a successful life in politics, and he did not appreciate my attitude toward him.
The governor is a busy man.
Yeah? Well, I'd hate to inconvenience him. Let him know that General Wason Harris stopped by.
General Wason Harris? Did you say you were General Harris?
In the synthetic flesh.
Would you like to see the governor now?
That's why I came.
Yes, sir. We'll go straight away.
And my men? I don't think it would be wise to leave them here.
No, sir.
The suits led the entire regiment to the administrative building, then escorted Jackson and me inside while the rest of the men waited in the hall, which was so wide that it looked like a cul-de-sac. There were areas within the spaceport that looked like buildings inside of buildings. The executive offices looked like they must have looked before all the trouble began. Bright lights shining from the ceiling, a clean beige carpet underneath our feet, and a pretty personal assistant to greet us as we stepped off the elevator. She was tall and curvy with long blonde hair and pale skin. She ushered us to the governor's office.
That's Hughes's granddaughter.
The girl caught Jackson staring at her and gave him a shy smile. The colonel couldn't take his eyes off her.
Put it on ice, Colonel. We want her grandfather on our side.
Yes, sir.
Hughes met us at his office door.
Good to see you, General.
Hughes and I shook hands. Governor, this is Colonel Curtis Jackson. Jackson and Hughes shook hands, and Hughes led us into his office, which apparently doubled as his home. There was a bed in one corner of the room, Hughes's bed.
I suppose you're here about the Night of the Martyrs. I can assure you that my office had nothing to do with that unfortunate event. Colonel Riley has asked me about the incident several times.
So he tells me.
I understand EMN Intelligence has had agents investigating as well.
And you still have no idea who could have been behind it?
No idea. General, these people are loyal to the enlisted man's empire. They are aware of the sacrifices your military has made.
Did you know I lost two men on the way here?
Yes, I heard about that. Most unfortunate. I am sure Spaceport Security will find the people responsible.
Spaceport Security is my people. What about your people? What are you going to do to help?
What do you mean?
Two murders have been committed. Help us bring the killers to justice.
General, how would you have me help? Your best course of action is to keep me out of this.
Bullshit. You know what I saw when I looked around the spaceport? I saw the beginning of a war. Those Legion banners on the walls out there, they're a call for war.
I assure you, General. War with the enlisted man's empire is the last thing these people want. What happened in the Grand Arcade was an accident. A serious and unfortunate accident.
The Night of the Martyrs was not an accident.
Those banners aren't an accident.
Nor are they a call to arms.
Tell me about Legion.
There is a religious revival going on. These people have nothing. They live in squalor. Some of them are turning to religion. Look, General, they are refugees with nothing but the blankets on which they sleep. They are impoverished, they are uncomfortable, and they are unhappy. What would you expect? It's a common thing. People who have nothing often turn to God. Frankly, I consider the revival a positive turn of events. People in need look for a deliverer. They could have turned to a military figure, but they chose to go with God.
What does that have to do with Legion?
Well, in order to have a God, you need to have a devil. They call their devil Legion.
What about the Night of the Martyrs? What was that? Hybrid, military, faith-based salvation?
General Harris, you can't possibly believe those attacks were connected with a spontaneous demonstration in the Grand Arcade.
I sure as spec see a connection. Those people consider us their enemy. I don't know shit about legions and devils, but I know war flags when I see them. And those banners qualify as war flags. Those people out there, they're looking for a fight.
They don't want war, Colonel. They know their situation. They know that you feed them and that you rescued them from the Avatari. Rescued them twice. General, they are loyal to the enlisted man's empire. They know what would have happened if you left them on Olympus Cree. They haven't forgotten. There are women and children out there, wives and sons and daughters. You cannot possibly believe these men would sacrifice their wives and children.
Bullshit.
Gordon Hughes may have been a war hero in his youth. But now he was a dried-up old man with white hair and wrinkles. His bloodshot eyes peered out from puffy red rims, and his lips were flesh-colored and dry. The corners of his mouth drew back in an ironic smile.
What did you expect when you arrived, Colonel? A hero's welcome? Perhaps you were hoping for the red carpet treatment, Colonel. I'm sorry if we disappointed you.
No, Governor. When I save people's lives, I expect them to throw trash at me. Wasn't that why we pulled your people off Olympus Cree, so they could crush my Marines with their garbage?
Did you happen to notice the way those people are living out there?
Maybe they would have been happier if we'd left them on Olympus Cree. They could have died in the comfort of their homes.
How did 6,000 new Olympians get to Earth?
Do you think I had something to do with it? Do you think I sent them? Well, if I had to guess, I would say that they stowed away on a freighter.
6,000 men? That's a lot of men to go unnoticed.
6,000 out of 17 million.
Small fraction.
Would you have stopped them if you knew about it?
They broke the law. Aside from questions of right and wrong, Colonel, I am against anything that prolongs our encampment on Mars. Just from a pragmatic standpoint, it seems obvious that their actions would be interpreted as provocation, yes? You see those men as seditious, a threat to the stable government you are trying to create, and your suspicions extend to the entire population of Olympus Cree. I understand why you have reacted to the attacks as you have. You ask me a question, and that is my answer. I am against anything that keeps us trapped on Mars.
But you don't care that they tried to kill 2,000 Marines?
Colonel, which answer are you more likely to accept? That I object to the killing of Marines because it is evil? Or that I object to the killing of Marines because it's politically inconvenient?
Ha!
You still haven't answered the question. Would you have stopped them?
Leaving Mars is a criminal act. I consider them criminals.
Another dodge.
What do you want me to say?
Would you have stopped those men if you could have?
I could not have stopped them, General. I would not have tried. There are people in this spaceport who wish they had died on Olympus Cree. After a year of waiting, people who would rather have been incinerated than live in this squalor.
Transporting the new Olympians was going to be a long, slow process. Back when we evacuated Olympus Cree, we had a fleet of barges that could carry 250,000 passengers at a time. We no longer had those barges. Now we would need to ferry the new Olympians to Earth in warships and freighters, a few thousand at a time. The process could take over a year. I mentioned that to Hughes.
That's no excuse. You should have started the evacuation 11 months ago.
The regiment bivouacked in a food court, a tight fit for 1,500 Marines, but probably worse for the 2,500 people we evicted. I chose the food court because it was in a secluded cul-de-sac. A narrow service hall looped behind the ring of empty restaurants, but that made the area all the more attractive. It might lure the enemy into an attack.
Do you want me to post guards in the service hall?
Not a chance. I don't want to scare visitors away. I want to invite them.
Yes, sir. My men can rig a warning system. That shouldn't scare them away.
Good thinking, Colonel.
Aye, sir.
And Colonel, why don't you place some equipment in the air ducts while you're at it? Set up a wide perimeter. I want to be ready for visitors.
Yes, sir.
I watched my men set up their bivouac. They set up a manned, chest-high bulletproof barrier by the entrance into the food court. 100 men tended that checkpoint. Technicians filtered out the back doors of the various restaurants. Once they placed their filament-sized cameras and sensors in the hall, not even a Martian louse would be able to slip through unobserved. Self-guided robotic sentries now roved the air ducts, patrolling for movement, heat, sound, electrical current, and chemicals. They were our electronic canaries. The size of house cats, the sentries were far from discreet. They were loud and large, but that was their charm. They saw and heard everything, and if the enemy destroyed them, that provided us with an early warning as well. The mood around the regiment relaxed. Most of us removed our helmets. Some men even stripped off their armor and walked around in their bodysuits. Using the command link, I contacted Cutter on the Churchill.
What I wouldn't give for a private room with a rack and head right about now.
I can send a shuttle.
I'm just bitching. By the way, you might want to set up some sterilizing lamps for my men.
Headlice?
Mars' only indigenous life form. A lot of my men are scratching their heads.
But not you.
No comment. I told Cutter about my visit with Gordon Hughes, and that led to a brief discussion about the ancient Roman practice of decimation.
You know what the Romans used to do when their soldiers were attacked in conquered territories? They used to line up the town and kill every 10th person.
There are 17 million people in this facility. I'd end up killing 1.7 million people plus change.
Plus change?
Plus change. You may not have heard this, but the new Olympians have not stopped copulating since moving to Mars.
Does a mother and a newborn count as a single unit?
Well, I don't think the Romans killed mothers or newborns. Just men.
Oh. In that case.
We were down for the night, and we had a secure perimeter at that point. And I had no idea how much trouble I was in. The sons of bitches tried to gas us. They must have known we would take off our helmets once we set up camp, and they tried to get us by pumping poisonous gas through the air vents. The killer mist rolled along the bottom of the air ducts like fog on a lake. One of our robot sentries sniffed it from 40 feet away, analyzed the chemicals, and reported that the lethal cloud was on its way. The robot then switched into stealth mode and drove straight into the gases, cameras rolling, using telemetry to send back everything it saw as it tried to trace the source of the attack. The men monitoring the robot called for Colonel Jackson, and he invited me to watch.
What kind of gas is it?
Chlorine gas, sir. After they run out of chlorine, maybe they'll come after us with bows and arrows.
Improvised munitions.
I knew that chlorine was one of the few chemicals in good supply on Mars. Any cleaning drone on Mars probably involved chlorine-based disinfectants. The little robot pushed through layers and coils of greenish-yellow gas, relying on magnetic and sonar signals to navigate through the vents. It detected every turn, every rise, and every weld, and it transmitted its findings back to us in the form of a three-dimensional map. The robot traveled through 63 feet of chlorine gas before it located the open vent and the glass hose that were the source of the trouble.
Can you transmit the source location to my command link?
The tech tapped a couple of keys.
Hi, sir. Try frequency 99998.
I came prepared. I brought a small handheld communicator that I patched into the command link. The little remote included a 4-inch screen and a camera and a microphone. When I powered the screen, I saw the glass hose and the map that the robot had transmitted. The opening of the hose looked to be about 4 inches in diameter, with gas spewing out of it as thick as sludge.
You know where the gas is coming from?
They must have a jenny, sir.
I suspect so. Can you tell if there are people around it?
The robot cruised right up to the mouth of the hose, peered inside it. Then the world began spinning out of control.
What happened?
It pitched an eye.
That was tech speak for dropping a remote camera. On my display, I saw yellow gas and glimpses of glass. The camera must have been tiny, no bigger than the point of a pin, but dense enough that the gas did not flush it out of the hose. It rolled down the hose, all the while transmitting back images of a small space, maybe a closet, in which three men stood. I handed Jackson my M27.
Keep it warm for me, Colonel.
What are you doing, sir?
I'm going to introduce myself to our new friends.
Admiral Cutter said you would go rogue at the first sign of action.
Did he? I bet he told you to send a team with me if I did.
No, sir. He said not to bother asking.
He knows me.
He also said that I should warn you that you'll be relieved of command if you continue playing commando.
Another good insight.
Do you want me to send some men with you, sir?
No.
I stripped off my armor and the bodysuit underneath. Hoping for a chance to get out on my own, I had come with civilian clothing under my bodysuit. That was also my reason for bringing the handheld remote. The brick-sized device felt clumsy in my hand, but I thought I could use it in the spaceport without drawing too much attention.
Are any of your troops packing civilian gear under their armor?
Negative, sir.
Then I guess I'm forced to go alone.
As I walked to the barrier, Jackson spoke through the remote.
General, there's movement in one of the service halls.
I want prisoners, not corpses. If someone knocks on the door, you let them in, and you take them alive. Am I clear, Colonel?
Aye, sir.
And speaking of being taken alive, I will signal you if I run into trouble.
Yes, sir.
And I will signal you before I return. I don't want your boy shooting me when I come back.
No, sir.
I looked both ways as I left the court.